From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Audie Cornish for Farai Chidea. Veteran journalist Chauncey Bailey, a newly promoted editor of the Oakland Post, a black newspaper, was fatally shot in downtown Oakland yesterday. Now, the Oakland police are calling it a targeted shooting. Witnesses told police they saw just one gunman who was dressed in black clothing and black headgear. The assailant allegedly shot Bailey several times before running to a waiting van. Now, Bailey was an outspoken journalist, and he was known for his confrontational style, but authorities don't know of any specific or recent threats on his life. We're going to look at this story and a whole lot more today on our Reporters Roundtable. Here to help us out is Marcus Mabry, New York Times international business editor and author of Twice as Good, Condoleezza Rice, and Her Path to Power. Also freelance broadcaster reporter Mara Skiavocampo and John Yearwood, world editor for the Miami Herald. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's start with the death of Chauncey Bailey. Now, news is coming from KCBS AM radio that he had been researching an investigative piece about a local bakery linked to a black Muslim group. Now, that same bakery was raided early this morning. And to be clear, there's no definitive reporting or evidence yet linking the bakery to Bailey's murder. But it does raise a question for all of you. And I want to start with you, Marcus. As a journalist, have you ever really encountered stories that you were afraid to touch, afraid to pursue?
Well, there have been a few stories in my own journalistic career, just because at this point, of course, I'm an editor, and before that I was a manager at Newsweek for the last 5 years as chief of correspondence, in charge of all of our bureaus and all our reporters in the U.S. and overseas. It is much more common overseas than in the U.S. to face this kind of threat. For instance, reporters in Moscow who cover the dealings and the misdealings of the Russian business community, of the Kremlin, the Russian political structure, and of mafioso figures in the former Soviet Union, actually face this kind of threat for the political stories or the economic stories or the corruption stories they do all the time. And we've had a wave of killings of journalists in Moscow. It's much less common here these days, although obviously there are reporters who cover dangerous stories and face these risks.
Mara, as a freelance television reporter, can you talk a little bit about what these dangers say about being in the news media?
Well, just to touch upon what Marcus was talking about in terms of the condition that journalists work in Russia, I was there in the fall after Anna Politkovskaya was murdered. She was an investigative reporter, and I was covering that story. And I was very grateful at that time to be an American journalist, because I came face to face with the reality that a lot of people risk their lives for this work, and it's very dangerous work for them in different parts of the world. So it makes me shudder to think that perhaps he was murdered because of the work that he was doing, because, you know, as a working journalist, that's a very scary thought. And my heart definitely goes out to his colleagues and his family, because by all accounts, he was a valued member of the community, a father, and it's a great loss for the community.
John, what effects do you think this could have on the Oakland Post, on the paper itself and its staff?
Well, first, let me express condolences to Chauncey's family on behalf of the National Association of Black Journalists. Chauncey, as you may know, was one of the founders of the Bay Area Black Journalists Association, and we will be talking some more about this when we get together for our annual convention next week. I also wanted to add to what Marcus was saying. We know what happens in Russia, but I think as a member of the Inter-American Press Association's Impunity Committee, we have seen this happening increasingly in our own hemisphere. There's a lot of it taking place in Mexico and other parts of Central and other parts of Latin America, and it's something that we have been working to resolve. In terms of what impact this would ultimately have on the paper, from what I've read, my sense is that the publishers have every intention to go ahead with the investigation that they were doing.
And I was wondering, John, if you could also talk a little bit about Chauncey's contribution to the field of journalism.
Well, one of the things that I thought was really profound, certainly the world has lost an exceptional journalist, and I say the world largely because of his contributions, not just in this country, but what he has done outside. He's done a lot of pieces from Vietnam and elsewhere. I think that, as I mentioned, we'll be talking some more about this when the NABJ holds his convention next week. But I think any kind of this is, if you want to call it an assassination like this, I think does not bode well for our profession. And as Marcus alluded to, the fact that it happened here in this country, certainly gives all of us pause.
I want to move on to some international news. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas yesterday. The meeting was a show of support for Abbas and his ouster of the elected Hamas-led government. Now, Rice was also stumping for a conference that they want to have this fall, which the U.S. is hoping will lead to some sort of peace discussions between Israel and the Palestinians.
Many people with whom I spoke in the region said that they wanted to make certain that this conference, this meeting, was one that would be substantive, that would be meaningful, that would really advance the two-state solution.
Meanwhile, Hamas is accusing Rice of trying to deepen the divisions among Palestinians. Marcus, do they have a point there?
Well, that's an interesting question. There might be a point there, but the point is, I think, a strategic one, which is the administration, of course, led by Secretary Rice, is trying to separate Hamas from what the administration and Western Europe at this point considers a legitimate Palestinian government headed by Mahmoud Abbas and currently occupying the West Bank, while Hamas, which is considered by many of the Western governments and certainly the United States government as a terrorist organization, occupies the Gaza Strip. So Hamas, by taking over Gaza by force, they were actually elected democratically to lead the Palestinian legislature, but Hamas actually took over by force to force out their partners in the Fatah movement, which is the successor to Yasser Arafat's power in the Palestinian Authority, and they did that themselves. And so the U.S., you know, that I think did more to separate the Palestinian people and to divide them, this civil war that was actually in effect already in the Palestinian territories than anything the U.S. could do. I think this is a really interesting challenge that Rice faces. And she was asked yesterday in her way back to Andrews Air Force Base outside Washington what she could accomplish in the next 17 months, because that's all this administration has left. And given the fact that we've seen this problem for 30 years in the Middle East, this partition of Palestine, and the fact that this president was the first one to say, to his credit, most international observers will tell you that the Palestinians should have their own state. It should be separate from Israel, and there should be two states in that region next to each other, side by side, living in security and peace in the Middle East. Time is running out. The clock is ticking. Rice will, I think, spend the rest of her 17 months in Washington as Secretary of State working to help to ensure that if there is not a settled Palestinian state by the end of that George W. Bush's term, at least there is progress toward it. It is a huge challenge. It is hard to believe at this point that the administration will be successful, and lots of the challenges they face actually are of their own making. Rice said once again the narrative that she's been saying more and more, which she wants to be the narrative of the end of this administration, which is this administration will leave a Middle East that at least has seeds for peace, democratic seeds, she calls them.
And Marcus, I don't want to interrupt you there for a second and ask John, in thinking of the upcoming discussion and attempts to get to the issue of peace, is there any sense of, are these talks this week forecasting anything for the fall?
Well, I think they are, but also let me talk a little bit of, I guess I'm a little bit more optimistic than probably some are, because I see something slightly significant happening here. When I look at what's happening in the region, particularly as it relates to Hamas and Fatah, and the fact that Rice and other members of the quartet are pouring billions of dollars into the West Bank, I'm thinking about, to some extent, what happened in Europe, between Eastern Germany and Western Germany. And my sense is that over a period of time, certainly I don't see it happening within the next 17 months, but I think that they will put in the seeds for some kind of long-term, I don't want to say it's a Palestinian state happening, but certainly what I see is the U.S. and other members of the quartet putting a great deal of money into the West Bank, and ultimately what will happen is that Palestinians in Gaza will be looking at what's happening in the West Bank and looking at the economic progress that's happening in the West Bank, and what the U.S. and I suspect other members of the quartet will hope coming out of that they will push for change within Gaza. It's something that I think potentially could happen, but I think with the signs and with what we've been seeing lately, as I said, the U.S. and others are pouring billions into the West Bank. So I'm a little bit more hopeful. You know, I think I see something happening, beginning to happen there. And as someone who was in the region within the last year or so, and talking to people there about potentially what's happening, as Marcus said, that it is certainly not easy. It is a difficult, very difficult task ahead. But I think that with what happened in Gaza and in the West Bank, I see an opening there for the U.S. and others to really make a difference in the region.
Mara, I want to talk to you quickly about Barack Obama and his comments this week, saying that he reserves the right for the U.S. to consider going into Pakistan to deal with terrorists if need be. And he's taken a lot of heat from rivals about being naive on foreign policy. Is this conversation or his comments going to improve against those comments?
My guess is no. I think at this point, the Clinton camp must be kind of patting themselves on the back for how masterfully they've played this, because his weak point was his foreign policy experience. And so by calling him naive, they played on that. And now he's puffing out his chest and trying to prove how tough he is, that he's not weak on terrorism, that he's not against the use of the military in certain circumstances. And this is a war-weary nation. So at this point, I think talking about a new military operation in a different country is not something that's really going to score him a lot of points.
Well, we'll see how people respond to this in the next few weeks. Mara Esquiva-Campo, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
John Yearwood is a world editor for the Miami Herald. He joined us from member station WLRN in Miami. And Marcus Mabry is the international business editor for the New York Times. Thank you all.
Thank you.